No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Before I introduce tonight's special guest, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez. Hi, Kathleen. Happy Cinco de Mayo. As always, thanks for helping to get the conversation started.
Hey, Michael, Senator Brown, I'm glad to be here, and hello to the audience. I'm Kathleen Gomez, and I'm talking to you from the Mexican border. You know, today is Cinco de Mayo, and while it at times seems to be a bigger celebration in the U.S. than in Mexico, few people in the U.S. know that it commemorates the Mexican Army's miraculous victory over France at the Battle of Puebla. The biggest misconception people have is that they think Cinco de Mayo is actually Independence Day, and that holiday is in fact celebrated on September the 16th. Mexico achieved its independence from Spanish rule in 1821, and Cinco de Mayo is actually a commemoration of a victory by Mexican troops 50 years later on May 5th, 1862. From the time of Mexican independence in 1821 to the time of this battle in 1862, Mexico suffered numerous setbacks in its attempts to form a stable republic. 15 years into its independence, Texas seceded from Mexico. The Texas Revolt eventually led to the Mexican-American War that took place in 1846 to 1848. This forced Mexico to surrender approximately half of its territory to the U.S. After that, Mexico went into a very serious recession, and President Benito Juarez inherited a bankrupt Mexican treasury and decided in 1861 to issue a moratorium halting payments on Mexican foreign debt, much which was owed to France. So France sent in the troops to Mexico to secure the debt. And this battle, the Battle of Puebla, was so important because 4,000 Mexican soldiers defeated a much better equipped French army composed of 8,000 men that had not been defeated for almost 50 years, and which at that time they were considered to be the best army in the world. 1 year after, the French brought in more troops and reattacked. This time they were able to make their way to Mexico City, take the capital, and install Emperor Maximilian, who ruled Mexico for about 4 years, until his execution in 1867 by troops loyal to President Juarez. Although the Battle of Puebla on Cinco de Mayo was rendered militarily insignificant later by the French's victory, it did inject the Mexican people with pride and patriotism it had never before enjoyed. So there you have it, Senator, the history of what Cinco de Mayo truly means, and it's not just about going and getting some cerveza and some margaritas.
But I can still have a margarita, right?
You can still have a margarita, okay. Yes. All right. And use some shots of tequila if you want.
Okay. Well, thanks, Kathleen. That story gives me great hope. If the Mexicans could beat the French and regain control of their own affairs, maybe those of us in Washington who are struggling to gain control from Congress can do the same. As our listeners probably know, the president was in Mexico this week for talks with Mexican President Naito. Meanwhile, in Washington, the issue of developing a comprehensive immigration policy for the United States has been on the front burner. The United States Senate is struggling to devise an immigration reform bill that will overhaul the current system and provide a pathway to citizenship for more than 11 million undocumented aliens while keeping America secure and safe. This is one of the many complicated issues that we hope we can start a dialogue about. We expect that our discussion will span many shows, and we hope that you will call in and become part of the conversation. This week, we're going to address one of the primary issues involved in the current debate, and that is the issue of border security. We're lucky to have as our guest this evening Dr. Michael Gomez. Dr. Gomez has been involved in politics all his life, from serving on the school board to being a member of the city council, and most recently as the elected mayor of Douglas, Arizona, a city where this issue is a priority. Dr. Gomez formed the Border Mayors Coalition of Arizona, which consisted of the border towns of San Luis, Nogales, and Douglas, in an attempt to help develop policies to effectively deal with the problems these areas face in dealing with border security. Good evening, Dr. Gomez. Thank you for joining us. We're really happy to have you. We know the issue of border security is viewed differently in the Northeast here, where we are hundreds of miles from the border. My first question to you, Dr. Gomez, welcome, is that we know that during your tenure as mayor, this was a hot topic for you. Can you tell us what secure borders means to you and to your community?
Yes, Senator Brown, and I'm very glad to respond to you, and thanks for having me on there.
Our pleasure.
Senator, when you take an oath, and everybody's taken an oath sometime in their lives, whether it's school board, whether it's elected officials, whether you serve on any kind of community affair, you swear and you take an oath that you are going to provide security for your constituents. Whether they be foreign or domestic, you're supposed to protect the citizens of your community. And when I say community, I have to include the areas surrounding Douglas, because Douglas kind of represents in their partnering with, say, the elected mayors of Cochise, the elected people from Arizona, the elected people of the nation. That is there where we have a window to protect those people around us, like the ranchers and all those people. And so when I took the oath, I was very, very sincere that I should provide a safe life, a tranquility, a good quality of life for my constituents. And so that was my goal, to provide a secure community at the border front, because living on the border has many, many different issues than just living 100 miles away from Douglas. When you live in Douglas, you know what the issues are to provide this safe environment.
Well, thank you.
I just wanted to say something in case the listening audience doesn't know. Dr. Gomez is my father. Hi, Dad. Thanks for coming on board. I appreciate it. And, Dad, I wanted to ask you a question. You know, border security kind of became very much of a forefront discussion in the past couple of years. And can you maybe tell the audience what happened that kind of threw our community right there up in the national news?
Well, what happened was that around late 2010, beginning of 2011, there were not that many Border Patrol agents. And what they were doing is they were shifting the border agents or officers to different areas. Well, I can only speak for my area. What they did is we had about 550 officers in our Border Patrol station, and that Border Patrol station extended from about 10 miles west of Douglas all the way to the New Mexico border. So when they took the officers away from here in around 2011, they left us with something like 300 officers. Well, that was not enough to cover the Douglas sector. So we started having more criminal activity. And the biggest event that became nationwide was when the rancher Krantz was killed. And they believed that it was from the drug people bringing drugs into the United States. Well, what I did is I tried to ask the congressional people, the senators, and the congresspeople to provide more officers down here. And that became a reality. Today, right after that, they noticed that we needed a secure border here because it was completely open. They were just coming across in droves, no apprehensions whatsoever. So they upped it to about 600 officers. And it was still a little bit difficult because it's a very mountainous area. Consequently, they also provided very high technology. Whereas today, for every 100 illegals that cross our borders, whether they're coming over to seek jobs or to bring drugs across the border, out of every 100 that try to cross our borders, 96, somewhere between 90 and 96 for every 100 are apprehended. So we are having a very, very good, safe environment now because of the numbers of the officers and the high technology that we have now. Still, the technology that we have right now can be upgraded, and it will be in 2013, all the cameras around the Douglas area will be upgraded so that it will almost be impossible to jump the fence around Douglas and not be apprehended. Not only that, with having a fence in Douglas, what they do is they have to go out to the outer areas, and they have to go into open country, and it's easier to apprehend them. So all in all, we're doing very, very well. And the biggest reason for me being a real advocate is that of all the apprehensions that are done today, listen to this, it's very important, more than 50% have criminal backgrounds. And so why are we so lax in giving that importance to a secure border? We don't want the pedophiles. We don't want the criminals. We don't want the robbers. We don't want the druggies. We don't want them to come into our country. That's important to me. It was important. I gave up the mayorship about 9 months ago after serving 8 years in the administration of Douglas. So I was a big advocate, and I think I got quite a few important agendas done to provide a safe environment in my area.
And let me put a perspective on that for the audience. And before the fence was up, they were approximately, I think this was probably like 2008, 2007 approximately, 1,000 people a day were caught crossing Douglas alone. Okay, and that's in the perimeter of Douglas. 1,000. Of those 1,000, that only represented 10% of what was coming through.
Now, that's right. It became a very, very busy sector here in Douglas, and that's why at that time we upped it to about 550 officers, and then they were outsourced to areas that even had more illegal crossings.
You know, Dr. Gomez, I think you've already answered my second question.
No, because the second question is.
Yes, which was, my question was going to be, why is this important to America? But it's obvious that it's important because we don't want criminals and pedophiles, as you say, and drug dealers crossing our borders. But I wonder if you could talk for a minute about the fact that now illegals are going into open country. Doesn't this become a human rights issue, too? I mean, aren't these people that are crossing the border in danger when they're left in the middle of the desert?
Yes, it does become a danger to the people. And what is happening is in the last few months, and possibly in the last 2 months, it's become more evident that they are trying to come in as families. And that's more dangerous than just males trying to come over here and get work, or the criminals, or whatever their purpose is. When you bring families over and you've got to go out into the outlying areas, it's very, very dangerous for them to out in this environment, because it's very hot and it can be very cold. And you do feel sorry for the families that are attempting to cross at this time. And, of course, you know the reason that the families are trying to cross is because they're anticipating that maybe Congress might get and give them amnesty if they are present in America at this time. Because can't prove whether that family just crossed the border or whether they have been here illegally 10, 11 years.
And my understanding, although I don't know if this is true or not, but my understanding is that very often the people that bring them over really don't care much about where they leave them and how hard a struggle it is for them to get somewhere.
No. In fact, we've heard from families down here that you see, when a family is deported into Mexico, our border city here, Douglas is Agua Prieta, and they'll be interviewed and they'll say that the coyote just crossed them over and showed them the lights of, Sierra Vista. I don't know if you know the geography here. Mm-hmm. They'll show them all the lights of Sierra Vista and they tell them, there you are, you're in Phoenix, and abandon them, because I don't know how seriously the judges convict these coyotes, and so they're afraid of being caught and fined and punished or jailed or anything like that. So once they cross them to the United States, there's been a history that they abandon the people just as soon as they cross the border. All they do is get them across and tell them, point the direction, tell them to go there.
So, and so to give, I'm sorry, Michael.
But no, that's okay.
To give you a perspective, the thing is, Sierra Vista is about 40 miles from Douglas, but Phoenix is 328. And when these people do come and they leave them, and, you know, before, when you hear stories about, you know, they'd leave them in these trucks and just, you know, they'd open the trucks and there would be 20, 30 people who have died because they're in the middle of the desert under such extreme measures, because at nighttime it'll get 20 degrees, 30 degrees, and then it'll be 110 during the day.
Let me also ask you, Kathleen, what do we do with people when the federal authorities, when the Border Patrol catches these people? What do they do with them? Are they prosecuted, or do they just send them back to Mexico? Or
there's been a lot of different policies. You know, it used to be like they just take them to the border and have them cross over. And it was like three strikes. So if they caught you three times, then they would put you on a bus that would go further into Mexico. That's changed now with this whole new policy. And actually, after Bob Krantz, who I went to school with his brother, died in when the homicide, they really started to, I think, there was so much uproar about it that they started to get very serious about it. So that now what they do is they bring him to the Border Patrol, either in Tucson or here in Douglas. They have a whole system where it is like Interpol. They run a background check. They find anything that they may have, whether they're from Argentina, you know, the state of Chihuahua, or, Mexico City. and then they will send them back. But, you know, it's very sad. And when I was working at the hospital, I was doing marketing, we would have rollover victims where they'll bring them across, they pack them in these vans. And there was two vans, one filled with children, one filled with adults. Packed to, I mean, you might have 12 or 15. The tires were bad, it rolled over, and we had these people coming out. I remember this one little boy who was 15 years old. He was so thin that he had a belt that was just tied and not, you know, like double knotted to hold his pants up. He had shoes that were way too small for him. We had to like bend his toes to get in there. And these people were from, I think, as far down as Chiapas. And they were here because they were starving. And, you know I would do the same thing for my family. I would come across and try to find work. But, you know, everything has changed. And now we're getting the drug cartels, which for people living along the Mexican border, they see the danger. I mean, it's amazing how many ultralights come over and drop, you know, cocaine or marijuana into the town and then go back. They never even land in the United States. They just come across. They have a ground crew. They drop it and they go back. Now, with these cameras are getting so good that they can see. What happens is the agents on the ground will hear the noise. They will call the Border Patrol station. The Border Patrol station will fix the location that the border agent's at, turn on the cameras. Those cameras can see 30 miles away and be able to triangulate everything and be able to catch the ground crew. But as long as there's a market for the drugs over here in the United States, there's going to be a way in which they get everything across.
Dr. Gomez, what can we do about border security that we're not already doing? You know, the president is in Mexico this week talking to President Nieto, is that how you pronounce his name? I'm sorry.
Yes, Enrique Nieto.
What should we be doing, in your opinion, that we're not doing?
I think what we have to do is we have to improve the technology, because I believe we have some enough officers in this area, but it's a vast area. It's just too big to patrol. What we're going to have to do is we're going to have to increase the technology, like air drones and have better radar systems. You see, like Kathleen was talking about ultralights. Mm-hmm. Ultralights can penetrate just about anywhere, but if you go and try to penetrate the Goldwater Range, which is down there in Yuma, mm-hmm. they can pick it up in San Francisco. They can pick up an ultralight.
Wow.
Here in this area and all around the border, you can't pick up an ultralight. And you can't pick up light aircraft as well as you can in that Goldwater Range. So what we have to do is improve the technology. I think the technology is the only way we're going to get a secure border. And the reason for that is the territory is just too big. People don't realize how many miles of border there are and the mountainous regions. And so technology is about the only source we're going to be able to use to secure our borders.
I'm sorry, Senator Brown. One more thing I think that's really important for the audience is that Dad, can you explain that how long the fence goes? Doesn't run along the whole border. Am I correct?
That's right. The fence that we have, Senator Brown, in Douglas, only extends west about maybe, I don't know how many miles, probably 20, 30, but to the east. And the Douglas sector is all the way to New Mexico. It only goes out about 7 miles. And then after the 7 miles, it goes to that Normandy barrier type, the cross rails. Mm-hmm. So people can just walk across there. And the drug cartel has gotten very innovative. You can't imagine how innovative they are. They'll take those flat back trucks that haul cars in emergencies. They lower it over the cross rails, pull the cars overloaded with marijuana, and bring it over to the United States. So you can't, you cannot have a Border Patrol sitting there along the entire fence, which is some, 30 miles, 33 miles, waiting for some truck to pick up a car loaded with drugs.
Well,
and another thing that's happening, if you think we are having a secure border with all the technology, every single day they apprehend people bringing over drugs. And I don't know if when I got cut off, if Kathleen told you, because we kind of talk about this just about every evening. Not only do they use ultralights, they catapult bundles of drugs over the border with air cannons, catapults, just about any way you can imagine they're bringing it over. I think I heard somebody say that they were even using those remote airplanes carrying little packages and dropping them in town, people waiting for them, the kids throwing tennis balls loaded with drugs across the border for people, other kids waiting to pick up the tennis balls. It's in every way you can imagine that they're bringing over. Between the rails, there's maybe about 4 or 5 inches. They take the packaged drugs and they just hand them through the fence around town, but not as much as when you go out beyond the fence and then you have the people just carrying the drugs over in backpacks.
Yes, I remember, Dr. Gomez, that at one time, wasn't there an elaborate tunnel that was built in Douglas that they flooded it and the technology? I think everybody in America remembers that story.
Exactly. You know, the first elaborate tunnel was built in the city of Douglas. And it was a very high-tech designed by an engineer. And not only did it have ventilation, it had lights, it had hydraulic lifts, it had anything you can imagine to have a tunnel that was just really high-tech. In fact, when I would go to meetings other than being an elected official, I was practicing dentistry then, and I was at a dental convention in Las Vegas, and we all sat around and said, "Where are you from?" And when I identified myself as being from Douglas, they all said, "We know where Douglas is."
Yeah.
Because that was the first elaborate, really high-tech tunnel ever built. But as you look at Nogales, I think it's so perforated over in Nogales with tunnels. I kept kidding the mayor of Nogales, Garino. I told him, one of these days you're going to sink because there's so many tunnels built over in Nogales.
Well, I remember seeing the article, and it seemed to me like it was something right out of James Bond, that these people had put so much money into it. But I guess if you can make a profit, they're always going to find a way to do it, so that we need to be even more clever in trying to prevent that kind of activity.
I want to thank you, Dad, and Dr. Gomez for, you know, joining us today and to help us get a national conversation started on this important issue. And I'm sure you'll come back and join us again as we talk about, you know, we're going to talk about immigration, gun control, and you giving us your perspective as a former mayor and councilman of a border community will be a really great asset. And I can't thank you enough for joining us. And stay on, and when we come back from our second half.
Let me say one last thing. I think that you really don't know, Senator, what occurs in this border, the border issues, unless you live it every single day. You take elected officials from Tucson, Phoenix, and beyond, they think they know what our issues are there, and they have no idea. Unless you live on the border, you don't know what is happening and what the border issues and what are the real serious ones are.
Well, I'm sure that's true, Dr. Gomez, and that's why we wanted to have you on the show, and that's why I believe that this is an important place to start the conversation with somebody that really does know. And we thank you for taking the time out of your important schedule to give us this perspective, because it's important for us to know. And we know that, everybody talks about border security, but yes, I'm sure it's much, much different, as most things in life are, when you have to live it as opposed to just talking about it.
We're going to take a short break, and we are going to play a song for you that's about a famous horse race that took place here, actually, in Al Prieta, right across from Douglas. And it was about a horse race that took place every year on the Mexican-American border, and it's called El Moro de Cumpas. Back in a minute.
Ahí les va, mis hermanos, la carrera más famosa del siglo. El 17 de marzo a la ciudad de Agua Prieta llegó gente de donde quiera. Vinieron a la carrera del relámpago y el moro, dos caballos de primera.
I just want to kind of explain to people what happened. You know, I grew up here on the Mexican border, and I used to say that it was the best of both worlds, and it was. We would have this race every year of the Mexican horse and the American horse, and there's a town about, I can't remember how far away it is, called Cumpas, that used to be known for breeding great racehorses. So these races used to take place, and everyone would come down in their trucks, and Americans be on one side, this side of the border, the Mexicans on the other, and we would have these races. You know, unfortunately, that's what, you know, the world has changed, and with the fences and with the drugs and with the way the world is now, we no longer have those races, and it's kind of a sad thing, but that's a very, very famous song of a horse race that took place in 1957. Dr. Gomez, are you on with us still?
Well, let me say, I'm still here. We'll okay. Get Dr. Gomez back. But, yeah, I love that music, and I remember coming to Douglas for your wedding, Kathleen, and being the worst dancer, at the wedding. So it brings back good memories and bad memories for me, because I don't think I've gotten any better at dancing. But the problem
was that you thought you were a good dancer.
I know, I did think I was a good dancer, but and it was very nice. It was nice of you not to point out that I wasn't.
Dr. Gomez, are you back on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I was just
thanks
telling
for staying
him,
with us.
Yeah, I was telling him. Do you remember those horse races that took place?
The what?
The horse races that took place.
Oh, the horse races that took when there wasn't so much criminal activity. I wasn't mayor then, but the mayor of Douglas and the mayor of our border city here, Agua Prieta. They would race against the best of, say, the Cochise County and the best of the Agua Prieta and South, and they used to have races, about 7 or 8 races along the border, and people from Douglas would gather on the north side, and of course the Agua Prieta on the south side, and they had a lot of fun. They would wave money and bet on the Mexican horse would win or the American horse would win. And as they would run up to the border to exchange monies, the Border Patrol was there, and they would, other people would say, hey, don't jump the border. And it was a lot of fun. But then when they had to build a fence around it, why, it just didn't happen anymore, because it just obliterated the area, and the Border Patrol had to build a certain kind of road to patrol the border area.
Well, you know, I think that brings us to an important point, Dr. Gomez. President Obama was in Mexico this week meeting with the new president. There's a new president, President Nieto, And it's obvious that immigration is such an important issue that the president has put it on the top of his agenda to go down there and visit this new president, who's seen as less conservative than the former president, Fox. Can you talk for a minute about cooperation between Mexico and the United States, how important you think that is in resolving the border security problems?
Well, the only thing that I can add to it is that myself, my experience, what I wanted to do is what I had told you previously, to secure the borders. But actually, when we get together, there's an organization called the Arizona-Mexico Commission, and Arizona gathers with all the entities from Mexico on how we can improve relationships. And generally, we don't talk about immigration or guest programs or amnesty or Dream Act or any of those items. What we do is we try to improve our relationships culture-wise, whether it's sports or economy or all those things. And we have a tremendous relationship. And, of course, this is all legal activities. Right. The Homeland Security will show the Mexicans and the Americans in these meetings on how they can easily make fraudulent Social Security cards and green cards and all kinds of identities that can prove that they are legally in the United States. And they'll show them to both of us. But as far as I are discussing our collaboration, our partnering with Mexico on the legal side is very, very productive. But generally, for myself, I think that I will leave it up to the U.S. government to settle those issues that I told you about. Either my biggest agenda was to secure the borders, to provide safety for all the not only to my community, but for the citizens of the nation.
Well, and economics is important, right? That seems to me that what you're talking about here is an important aspect of what you need to do in a place like Douglas, because you want to keep the drugs out and you want to keep the criminals out and you want to keep us safe, but you want to keep commerce going.
Exactly. You see, what happens is every mayor in the nation has the same problems that we have in Douglas. Budget deficits, economy is bad, and all that, and growth is not there. I believe that I learned that the GDP for the first quarter was only 2.5, and they had estimated that hopefully would be to 3, and 4% is feeding the mud. It's going nowhere. So,
yes.
So not only do we want to keep the criminal activity here out away from the United States, but we want to keep the legal commerce flowing. I don't know if you're aware or the people are aware that the Sonorans, or Mexicans, they come from deep in Mexico, spend $7.2 million every single day in Arizona.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Not only are we confronted with securing our borders, but we have to make sure that the legal trade keeps coming, because it benefits not only United States, but it benefits Mexico.
Yes.
And that, to me, is a phenomenal amount of money, you say, a day, right?
That's well, that was day. Done about 2 years ago, so I imagine it's greater amount spent every day. And I remind all the Arizonans that they should help the border cities with border security and legal trade, because they benefit as much as the border towns. The border towns only retain about 6% of the $7.2 million they're spending in Arizona.
And that's a thing I'd like to bring up. Remember we had a sheriff of Maricopa County, what's his name, Babu, who basically told everyone, don't go to the Mexican border, don't go to the border communities, it's not safe. And you know,
that's another issue that hurts legal commerce, Senator.
Yes, I'm
what
sure.
What happens is this, Babu said that it was a war zone in southern Arizona and not to travel there. Well, when you go publicly and you say that it's a war zone in southern Arizona, none of the big companies want to invest in the southern Arizona area. And sometimes they're even afraid to invest in the Tucson area because they feel that Tucson is a border city. So when Babu claims that it's a war zone down here, it's not.
Well, I've been to Douglas, Arizona.
Very interesting fact. We have not had a homicide in Douglas in 5 years.
I wish we could say that about Washington, but
exactly.
But I've been to Douglas, Arizona, and I would say to everybody that's never been to Douglas, Arizona, that you should go to Douglas, Arizona, because it's not only a beautiful community, but the people are among the nicest people that I've ever met. I remember being there with my wife and what a wonderful time we had and how open and friendly everybody was and what a beautiful area of the country it is. So I hate to disagree with the sheriff, but I say go to Douglas and spend some money.
I remember you went even across the line, and I think you had a great time.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it was a fun time, and everyone knew who you were.
Yes.
We've got to change that perception that it is dangerous around here. As I was talking to Mayor Gardino of Nogales, he also claimed that he hadn't had any homicides for several years. And Babu was talking about apprehending so many criminals in, I think it was Pinal County. And the statistics show that he was including all the car chases and everything, and in that category, he wasn't differentiating between what was the illegal criminal activity. I think he bunched it all together on how many criminal cases he had apprehended.
Well, like I say, it's a beautiful part of the country, and the people are very hospitable, and it's just a wonderful place to go. So I would go visit.
Another thing that probably on another time we can talk about the ports of entry, because after we formed the coalition in Nogales and Douglas and San Luis, and we started talking, we would kind of talk between us at least once a week because we had the same issues and how we would resolve them. Then Mayor Cook of El Paso decided to form one for the entire border of Mexico and United States, and that included mayors from all the way from San Diego and Tijuana down to Harlingen in Texas. And we got together in El Paso, and it was very productive. And what we wanted to do is get support for our ports of entry. And that's another subject that can be discussed at another date. But it's very, very important because Mexico is our biggest trading partner, and both the nations can benefit really, really economically.
Well, I hope that you will come back soon and discuss that. In the meantime, I'll take a few dance lessons, and maybe I can come down to Douglas and show you guys a couple of moves. But thank you so much again for being on. In our effort to be an educational as well as informative show, we're going to bring on a friend of ours, Rachel Bernard, who is my legislative assistant and has worked closely with Kathleen and I. And Rachel, in her other life, happens to be a bartender. So she's going to tell us how to make the perfect Cinco de Mayo margarita. So thank you again, Dr. Gomez, for coming. And we hope Rachel's margarita recipe goes over. Well, maybe after a couple of Rachel's margaritas, I'll learn to dance better. So thank you. Rachel, are you there?
I sure am.
Okay. Well, welcome to Shadow Politics. Rachel, you know, you get good luck and bad luck in life, and Rachel's been one of the best pieces of luck I've had in a long time. She's an integral part of what we do, and we're really happy to have her on the show. And, okay, Rachel, it's yours. Tell us how to make the perfect margarita.
Well, you start off with not having me make it, because I touch them every time I do.
Oh,
I know the recipe. I know, I'm just kidding. So pretty much, you just want to take a glass and you fill it with ice, and then you put 2 ounces of any tequila, but silver tequila is generally preferred. And then you do 1 ounce of lime juice, 1 ounce of simple syrup, and then 1 ounce of an orange liqueur, like Grand Marnier or Triple Sec. And then you just do a splash of orange juice. You garnish it with like a piece of wine, and then drink it up.
So, all Rachel, right. is the tequila that's gold, is that just for shots? Would that be a waste if you put it in your margarita?
No. It's all good. Tequila is tequila. You're going to have a good time if you're drinking tequila.
If I'm drinking silver, gold, or just the rot gut stuff, I'm still going to be okay?
I'm sorry?
You know, the stuff that they, well, you know, there's a lot of homegrown tequila, so I guess if we put that in, that'd be okay. But I always get in this argument with people. They say, you know, the gold, no, that's for shots. Just use the silver. You're wasting it if you do the gold. And so I was wondering what your perception of that was.
You know, I actually prefer silver tequila, like, all around. Like, it's really good, like, if you're doing, like, a tequila shot to ice it. And, like, silver tequila is, like, the best when it's cold. In terms of the gold, I just like the silver one better. And then you can always do like, if you really want to spice it up a little bit, you can do an infused tequila. Like I have, one of my friends made a ghost pepper infused tequila and was making, crazy margaritas.
I remember the day when I used to go across the line and get, you know, this tequila that had the worm in it. It was called mezcal, right?
Mm-hmm.
By the time we would get to the bottom of that bottle and eat the worm, oh my God, we would see things. But of course, that I didn't really do that. I was watching other people do that.
Yeah. If Kathleen's children are listening in, she just made that up to sound colorful. She didn't actually do that.
That's right, Dad. I never did that. I don't know what I was thinking. I was just trying to, you know, machismo.
At the age when she was in the convent at Douglas, studying her Bible and important stuff, she never did tequila. And I just got to weigh in on the quality of tequila. I once drank half a bottle of $3 tequila, and I couldn't look at the stuff for another 10 years. So pay the extra and get the good tequila.
That's so true.
Exactly, Patron.
Okay, Rachel, thanks for calling in.
All right, no problem.
We'll have you back on St. Patrick's Day so you can tell us how to make the perfect green beer.
We should have had her give us mint julep. We got to actually think the next holiday coming up, and we'll have her tell us. We'll do maybe July 4th. Mother's Day. What should mothers drink on Mother's Day?
How to get your mother drunk on Mother's Day. We'll do that.
Tequila. Or wine is always good.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Rachel.
Wine is more appropriate. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye. Okay, well, we're about to wrap up for the evening, and before I sign off, I have to tell you, as the United States Senator from the District of Columbia, that I want to thank the Hawaiian Senate for passing this week a resolution supporting full representation for the citizens of the District of Columbia. It took a lot of guts for them to stand up for our rights in the District of Columbia, and we thank them. And also, kudos need to go out to Vice President Biden for commenting that D.C. should be a state with two senators. It's good to know that some people out there get it. Kathleen, do you have any final words?
I think that's incredible that the state of Hawaii did that. You mean the Hawaii yes. legislature?
Yes.
Unbelievable. And that's what every state should do. And I encourage, you know, people that live in Iowa, California, wherever, to write to their legislatures to say, you know, it's about time that these people get, you know, representation. They pay their taxes. And that's what our democracy has always stood on. You know, no taxation without representation.
Well, thank you for that. And thanks for being with us again. Thank you, Kathleen. I hope you'll join us next week. And please have your friends join us. It's easy to get on. As you know, you just go to BBS Radio and go to station number 2 and click on it. And there we are. We'll be back next week with another show. I think we're going to revisit the issue of border security and certainly the issue of coming up with a immigration policy that is comprehensive and that keeps us safe but is humanistic and allows us to continue to be the great country that we've always been.
And I would just like to say to everyone that celebrates Cinco de Mayo, both here in the United States and in Mexico, to have a very safe Cinco de Mayo, and that's it. Adios, mis amigos, until next week.
Okay, thank you. Goodbye, and I'm going to go make a margarita. Thank you.
I'm going to go have some tamales and tacos.
Okay.
Ahí les va, mis hermanos. Carrera más famosa del siglo. El 17 de marzo a la ciudad de Agua Prieta llegó gente de donde quiera. Vinieron a la carrera del Relámpago y el Moro, dos caballos de primera.